Welcome to the latest edition of Auto Insider, where we're talking cars, car dealerships, and mostly crap about both. I don't know about you, but I think we're about ready to get started.
Hey, Zach here, one half of Your Auto Advocate. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. Before we jump in, I just wanted to remind you that back at the YourAutoAdvocate.com website, we have our upcoming release of our free browser extension that allows you to have Auto Advocate insights as you browse the web. Imagine being on CarGurus, Cars.com, or a dealer's website and having our recommendations about a suggested offer price, how negotiable the vehicle is, how many days it's been on the dealer's lot, that information, and more directly in your browser. Just head to YourAutoAdvocate.com and sign up to get early access. Now, let's hop into the episode.
Good afternoon, Zach. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm doing well, Dad. How about yourself?
Well, not too bad. I understand we're going to be recording our podcast today.
That is why you're talking into your microphone. Yes, that is what we're doing.
Well, I'm glad you gave that mystery away. Yeah.
It's not a mystery, Dad. Someone hit play on this episode where we are eventually, we promise you, eventually we are going to talk about the 10% rule on how much you should spend on a car. But they hit play on that episode, and now they're just listening to us talk about how we're thinking about starting our podcast episode.
Well, maybe we should.
Maybe we should.
What did you want to talk about today, Handsome?
Yes. So the 10% rule, Dad, I think it was one of our OG, original YouTube videos and guides back on the YourAutoAdvocate.com website. We presented to our audience your 10% rule. The question that we got all the time was, well, how much should I spend on a vehicle? And you went to the whiteboard, grabbed your chalk or your dry erase marker, whichever one you prefer to use, came up with a mathematical equation using all of the car math skills you know and love to give us the 10% rule. So I thought we'd take some time on the podcast to share it with our audience.
Yeah, which is why I use chalk on the whiteboard.
I'm not trying to date you or anything, but
yes. Well, the 10% rule as I created it, was based on somebody asking, how much can I afford for a monthly payment for a car loan? And, you know, we discussed how banks look at your income-to-debt ratio to make determinations as to whether you can still qualify for a loan. And most total debt or income-to-debt ratios that banks are willing to look at are somewhere between 40 and 45% of your gross income can be going to debt. That debt can include things like rent or mortgage, credit card payments, and an automobile loan. So some people might think based on their income that, well, you know, they can afford a really high car loan. And I don't necessarily think that's the case. My theory is that let's say you earn $60,000 a year, which is $5,000 a month gross. If you were to take 10% of that, that would be $500 a month that, in my estimation, you can apply towards an automobile loan, but not just the loan.
Yeah, I think it's important that you hit that home because so many people fall into the trap of, well, my payment's only this. A lot more goes into a car payment, doesn't it?
Well, a lot more doesn't go into a car payment. A lot more goes into car ownership.
Sure.
Okay. So, you know, if the payment were $500 a month, yeah, that's the payment. But that's not the end of your automobile expense in that given month. Your automobile expense, above and beyond your car payment, is automobile insurance, gas, maintenance, things of that nature. We won't even talk about depreciation, but just let's talk about you, for instance. You're a 25-year-old young man. When you had your S90, well, your automobile insurance was about $160 a month. Most younger people, their automobile insurance is probably running somewhere between $100 and $150 a month. Yeah. Well, that's on top of your car payment. Luckily today, the price of gasoline is relatively inexpensive. But, you know, even if it's $30 or $40 a month, that's part of your monthly automobile expense. And maintenance. Even if you only need to get an oil change or two during the course of a year, you know, you can probably figure that that's another, I don't know, $20 to $50 a month ultimately.
Yep.
So let's call it $25 a month. Let's call it $50 a month for gas, and $100 a month for insurance. That's $175 that you need to subtract out of that $500 that you have budgeted for a car. So realistically, in my world, the way I think, your car payment should be no more than $325 a month, with a total car expense that takes up 10% of your gross income at $500 a month.
Yeah, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, but it is really tricky to convince yourself that this is the path worth going down, because then you're thinking to yourself, well, for $325 a month, I can only get this car or that car. But if I spent the $500 a month to have the $500 a month payment, well, hey, BMW 3 Series, now I can somehow miraculously on an 84 month, you know, get that. And I think that's where a lot of people, I don't want to say go awry, but you sell yourself on this vision that you should have a nice fancy car. I know I sure did it, but it adds up all the different expenses. And the more expensive the car gets, Dad, the more expensive the maintenance gets, the more expensive the new part is that you need. Or if you get one of the extended warranties or the maintenance plan, that's more expensive. Just everything's more expensive. And it's tough to actually save any money.
And it is. And truth be told, if you go into a dealership, well, they're not going to talk to you about your total automobile month expense monthly. They're going to talk to you about just your car payment monthly, and they're going to concentrate on, well, what do you think would be a comfortable car payment that you could handle? Or what kind of monthly expense for your car payment did you have in mind? And the first thing a salesperson is going to say to you when you go, well, I can afford $500 a month, their response to you is going to be up to. Okay, because they want to push you beyond your comfort level. So up to, most people are going to go, well, I guess I could afford $550 a month. So, you know, with most salespeople, they're able to push you beyond what you thought was a comfortable limit for a car payment. If they ask you how much you're planning on putting down, and you go, well, I'm planning on putting down, say, $2,000, their first question to that is going to be up to, well, maybe I can go to three. So they're going to push you on down payment, and they're going to push you on monthly payment, and they're going to do everything in their power to extend the size of your budget. When you need to be strong enough to realize that you want to keep your total monthly budget at no more than 10% of your gross income. And that might mean, based on how much money you have to put down, that you need to consider something less expensive than what you really would like to have. It might actually mean you need to be practical instead of falling into the traps that we've set up in this country where everybody wants more than what we can really afford.
I don't know why you're saying that, Dad. That is such fatherly advice. Yeah. That's not what I want to hear. No, I'm totally kidding. And you know what's interesting, Dad, is I actually pulled up the Bureau of Labor Statistics data on how expensive it is to own a car, because it's interesting.
Okay.
Did you know there's 276 million registered vehicles in the United States?
I did not. That seems like an awful lot for 330 million people.
It's a ton of cars registered. And yes. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says it costs about $10,000 a year to own and run a car. And that includes, obviously, your gas and everything, but like, and your car payment. That is a lot of money to own and operate a vehicle. And so with your example, where we're talking about someone who grosses annually $60,000, so $5,000 a month, yeah, mm-hmm. you need to be under $10,000 a year in spend. I mean, you probably don't need to be in the sense that you could afford $10,000 to go towards that. But your rule and your best practice is to say, take 10% of gross, set that aside. That's what your budget should be. And it's not to dissuade you from trying to buy a fancy car. It's just, you know, don't fall for the credit trap is kind of what how I take this advice. Hey, Zach here, one half of Your Auto Insider. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. We really hope you're enjoying it. If you're interested in learning more about Your Auto Advocate, check us out at yourautoadvocate.com. We have some really exciting things going on that can help you during the car buying process. For example, Deal School was just launched. This is a 50-video, 6-quiz series, about 2.5 hours, that walks you through the process of negotiating the best car deal possible. Get access to things like Deal School and more for free at yourautoadvocate.com. Okay, let's get back to today's episode.
Well, if the Bureau of Labor Statistics suggests that the cost is about $10,000 a year, I'm not real good at math, as you know, but that's a little over $800 a month, okay? And if you're only making $5,000 a month, you really need to keep it at around $500 a month. Otherwise, you are going to overextend yourself. What's going to happen between all of your expense when it comes to owning the car is you're not really leaving yourself any disposable income or discernible income, I don't know, for other things that might make your life just a tad more fun than, I don't know, driving that 3 Series. You know, maybe you get around in a Mazda 3. It still has a 3 in the name, okay, instead of that 3 Series. But you have money to actually do things and enjoy your life as opposed to just paying for your car, paying for your automobile insurance. The more expensive the car, the more expensive the automobile insurance is.
Exactly.
The more expensive maintenance is going to be. So I know it seems counterintuitive because everything in our society seems to be disposable, and the advertising is geared to make us want everything. We're recording this in the week that I believe the new iPhone 12 is coming out. Now, my God, the hype on that phone is incredible. Okay, will it be faster than the iPhone 11? Yeah. Does the iPhone 11 still work? Are you still able to make your phone calls and, I don't know, search the web and everything else you need to do on a phone? Well, yeah. But how many Apple people are going to rush out to get the new iPhone that they don't really need? Because advertising in this country is geared towards making us want things we don't really need, but we feel like we've shorted ourselves if we don't buy it. So the same thing has to hold true with an automobile. You have to have some discipline in your spending habits. You have to have some discipline in your life. And you have to be in a position where you can leave yourself enough money so that you can do things in your life.
So, Dad, let me ask you a question. You were working as a sales manager or as a salesperson, any role that you held within the dealership, and you saw people come in that had previously purchased a vehicle and you could just tell that they kind of overextended themselves, either because they're now in a really severe negative equity position because they took out a really long loan or for whatever reason. What type of experiences did you have with that? Like, what type of stories can you share? Because I'd imagine if someone's listening to this, they've Google searched, how much should I spend on a car? They're listening to a kid and his dad who spent time in the auto industry and retail automotive talk about this. But like, do you have any stories or anecdotes about people who spent too much and ended up really putting themselves in a bad situation? And obviously don't name names or anything, but I'm curious. You were in the business for 40 years, 40 plus years.
Yeah, no, I saw it on a daily basis. You know, there are any number of people who have purchased cars and financed them, okay, and signed up for a 6 or 7 year loan term and decide 3 years in that they want a new car. And so they come in and they're the proud owner of excessive negative equity. And their first thought is to, well, roll that negative equity into their next loan, which instantly creates even more negative equity for them, increases their payments significantly because of all that negative equity. And I used to actually look at customers and say to them, this is going to sound odd, but you really shouldn't do this. Okay, you have to, at a certain point, bite the bullet. If you signed up for a 6 year loan, a 72 month loan, keep the car for 72 months. And if you're not going to keep the car for 72 months, don't just come in here and tell me you want to roll that negative equity into your next loan. Because at a certain point, you're not going to be able to roll negative equity into your next loan because it's just way too much negative equity and a bank's not going to finance it. So as I used to tell the customers, you either come up with money, you can either pay me now or you can pay me later. And it's in your best interest to figure out how to pay me now, because you're just going to keep paying interest on top of interest on top of interest, and you're not doing yourselves any favors when you do that. Now, I could counsel a customer about that, but that didn't mean I could convince them that they should come up with the money or that they shouldn't buy the new car. You know, because I wanted them to be customers forever, but I didn't want them to suddenly find themselves another 3 years from now in a position where, well, they can't buy a new car for another 4 or 5 or 6 years because they've buried themselves so much.
And that's where the 10% rule comes in. That hits home for me in the sense that if you're not going to be pragmatic in your spending and you're going to create the 20% rule for yourself, recognize that, yes, you can get it nowadays, like even a 9 year loan if you wanted to, just to make your monthly payment as small as possible. But you're going to continuously roll negative equity into a new loan, into more negative equity for another loan, until the bank says, because you've talked about this before, Dad, maybe you can share, you can finance more than 100% of a vehicle's value.
Yes.
Depending on
yes.
your credit, you can get financed up to 120%. Well, if
140.
So, and if I'll shut up in a second, Dad, I want you to explain that. But eventually, if you keep rolling negative equity and negative equity and negative equity into all these loans, you're going to reach a point where maybe it's a $50,000 car you're trying to buy, but the loan you need is $100,000. How ludicrous is that? Don't do that to yourself.
If you have really excellent credit, okay, banks will loan up to 140% of MSRP. So let's say the MSRP is $20,000. Well, if you have really excellent credit, they'll finance up to $28,000 on that car. So if you come in and you're trading a car and the car's worth $10,000, but you owe $18,000, okay, they'll allow you to roll that $8,000 into your loan. Now, once you have that $28,000 loan on that $20,000 car, guess what? That negative equity is now suddenly, I don't know, $12,000, $13,000, the minute you drive off the lot. And at a certain point, all that negative equity will add up to beyond 140% of MSRP that a bank will allow you to finance, which means you either keep the vehicle you have or you come up with the cash to get you to within those guidelines. But if you come up with the cash initially when you first buy the car, you won't find yourself with so much negative equity in the future. If you have the discipline to look at a less expensive car in the first place, you won't find yourself in this position. And as a salesman and as a sales manager, I would see it every day. One of the things that we would eventually we taught our salespeople to say when someone told them they had a trade-in was simply look at the customer and ask one question. How are you planning on handling your negative equity? Well, what do you mean? Well, we found that 80 or 90% of our customers owe more on their vehicles than what they're worth. I'm assuming that you're going to fall into that category. And if that's so, how are you planning on handling that? Are you planning on putting down the cash to make it 100%? Or what are you planning on doing? How are you planning on handling that? And it forces the customer to realize the situation they're in, and that it's their negative equity, not the dealership's negative equity. It's not our responsibility to figure out how to handle it. It's your responsibility, and you need to live up to your responsibilities. So how are you planning on handling it? And that's what most people have to realize when they trade a car when it's worth less than what is owed.
And so to bring this full circle, if you're thinking about how much should I spend on a vehicle, do the 10%. Look at your gross income. Look at all the associated costs of buying that car or leasing the car, and let that be your guiding light for how much you should spend. Don't be that, you know, typical car buyer that ends up just rolling things over, rolling things over, rolling things over. You're kicking the can down the road. You're either going to pay now or you're going to pay later, and neither is a great option. Avoid it if you're able to.
Absolutely. It's just use some financial common sense and some financial discipline, and realize that perhaps later in life, as you've grown more successful, then you can afford the more expensive things in life that you think you should have now.
Yeah, it's really well said, Dad.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the opportunity to share with our audience.
Yeah, of course. Appreciate it, like always. And until next time, I'll see you then.
You got it. Thanks, Zach. Love you, buddy.
Thanks, Dad. Thank you.